This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It is a special week. It's Hawaii in Town Week. You know, we've been talking about Hawaii all season long, had our trip out there in week zero while the Rainbow Warriors are in town. I will be there on Friday. Lots of people from VSiN will be in attendance for that game. We'll hear more about that game. Just a reminder, we do have Matt Eumanns today. So a little switcheroo. Instead of Wednesdays with Wes, we'll have Wednesdays with Matt and Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Previews. Wes Reynolds, don't worry. I know a lot of loyal listeners love some Wes Reynolds. He'll be with me tomorrow. We'll be breaking down the full card, giving all our best bets out. So just a reminder there. Also a reminder, continue to hit rate, review, over at iTunes and Spotify. The numbers continue to be great all year, a testament to you guys. Do have some swag. I will be picking that up later this week from our friends at Rainbow Authentic. So I got to figure out the proper way to get that out to you guys. But looking forward to that and much appreciated to our friends over at Rainbow Authentic. So we'll be having some swag here in a short amount of time. And a thank you to all of you who have continued to be loyal listeners all year long. And the YouTube numbers have been great. Every episode is up on YouTube, and continue to hit subscribe. I know we picked up a handful of new subscribers earlier this week, late last week. Let's get to 1,000. Let's do it. So much appreciated to all of you over there. All right, the housekeeping out of the way. Let's get into the big news in college football. The new playoff rankings are out. And look, I'm going to just start with this simple thing. This is a betting podcast. This is not college football screaming podcast. So we are not going to get into the nitty gritty of Notre Dame and Miami. Yes, you can roll your eyes and say, well, of course, the Notre Dame fan doesn't want to talk about the fact that Notre Dame shouldn't be ahead of Miami. I want to look at it from this standpoint. How do we bet this moving forward? How do we bet Miami? How do we bet Notre Dame? How do we bet any of these teams right now? What did we see change last night with the college football playoff rankings coming out? And honestly, the biggest shift that we saw was in the G5. And Adam Burke and I talked about this on Monday. And of course, my dopiness didn't bet it, because I said the best bet out there right now when it came to the G5 was Tulane to make the playoff at around plus 550. And what happened last night? Tulane showed up in the top 25. And here's the interesting thing, and we'll get to Notre Dame Miami here in a moment. But from a betting standpoint, the biggest move we saw last night was Tulane to make the playoff. It went from plus 550 down to plus 190. It was a steady mover. North Texas was odds on. They're now still the favorite at even money. So it's worth noting here real quickly, the American tiebreakers. The American tiebreaker, it all is based off the college football playoff rankings. If a team is ranked in the top 25 of the college football playoff rankings and they're tied for first, which Tulane currently is, guess what? They're getting into the American Championship. If only one team is ranked and the rest are not ranked, that would lead to computer tiebreakers. And from my understanding, I don't think the computers love Navy all that much. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on when it comes to the betting board. But North Texas and Tulane seem to be the most likely matchup. Now they have to take care of business. I personally think East Carolina is going to lose on Saturday to UTSA. So I think East Carolina is going to be out of the equation. Navy doesn't play this week. They play on Thanksgiving against Memphis. I believe they'll be an underdog at Memphis just based off of power ratings that are out there, but they certainly could win the game. They won the game this past weekend as a double digit underdog against South Florida. The most likely matchup is North Texas and Tulane. I don't know who would host that. I think North Texas would, but I'm not positive on that one. So the one that got hurt from a G5 standpoint, and of course, on Saturday night, I'm sitting there watching the betting board, and I'm thinking, does James Madison have a shot to get in? They got hurt significantly yesterday, I thought. I thought the committee showed their hand a little bit with the American, and it really feels like if Tulane and North Texas and probably Navy win out, that's going to be your representative for the group of five. So from a betting standpoint, I still think the best bet is probably Tulane at plus 190 at DraftKings. Obviously, you're not getting the best of the number. It was much better earlier this week. All right. As for the situation that we saw unfold last night with the rankings, what surprised me was that Alabama dropped behind Notre Dame. And I have an Alabama ticket to make the college football playoff. We also have a Notre Dame future from earlier in the season that has aged well, didn't age well the first two games. But I look at Alabama, and I think if you're an Alabama fan, you've got to be pissed. And I understand that there are a lot of upset Miami fans. Well, the team that should be the most upset, in my opinion, is Alabama. Alabama has wins over Georgia, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Missouri, all ranked in the committee's top 25. Notre Dame currently has one win over a top 25 team. Now, they destroyed Pitt, who was ranked last week, and because of that domination, Pitt got booted out of the top 25. Pitt beats Georgia Tech this week. I would imagine the Panthers are back in the top 25. But Alabama, sitting there at 10, if I'm a Crimson Tide fan or Crimson Tide backer, I'm frustrated that they dropped as far as they did, considering the postgame win expectancy was 95% for their loss to Oklahoma. Oklahoma deserves to get credit for the win and deserves to be ahead of Notre Dame, in my opinion. But that's where we sit right now. I got a text yesterday from a buddy of mine, a Notre Dame fan, and he said, what's the doomsday scenario for Notre Dame? And is it something we should look at from a betting standpoint? We talked about this briefly on Monday, but I wanted to dive into it a little bit more. So you got the Miami situation. I want to read you kind of the quote that was circulating out there regarding Hunter Yurcheck, the committee chair of the College Football Playoff Committee, and the Notre Dame-Miami situation. He said that they have not been compared to each other because they're not close enough to each other in the rankings. And he mentioned that Miami has two losses to unranked teams. Notre Dame has two losses to teams in the committee's top 13. Obviously, as we all know, one of those losses was to Miami. We're not getting into that. But yes, Miami is being dinged for their two losses to Louisville and SMU. Those two teams play each other this week. So one of those teams is going to have four losses come the end of this weekend. But I think looking at the current market, and Notre Dame being around minus 2,500 to minus 3,000 to make the playoff, should they be a favorite to make the playoffs? Yes, of course. But looking at the top 10 and a pretty logical scenario, the teams that you're looking at ahead of them, Texas Tech, they went out, they're in. Now, you could talk doomsday scenario if you want, and say, what if Texas Tech loses in the Big 12 championship game? Possible. I think unlikely, but certainly possible. Would Texas Tech with two losses get in over Notre Dame with two losses? Debatable. I don't know the answer to that. I want to look at 6 through, we'll call it 13. Ole Miss, one game left. They got Mississippi State. They'll be a favorite on the road at Mississippi State. If you're talking about banking a 12-1 ticket on Notre Dame to miss the playoff, Ole Miss wins out. Beats Mississippi State, they're in. They're ahead of Notre Dame. Oregon, what if they win out? USC, they're around a 10-point favorite this weekend. They'll be a favorite next weekend at Washington. Oregon wins out. They're 11-1. They're in. Oklahoma, Missouri this week, LSU, both at home, favored in both games. They win out. Here's the unique wrinkle with the current rankings. Alabama, they have a FCS opponent this weekend in Eastern Illinois. Then they play Auburn, where, by the way, kind of a short line there, only 5.5 at FanDuel. And then they have the SEC championship game if they beat Auburn. If they lose to Auburn, they're out. Don't have to think about it. Then Miami has a better chance of getting in. For Alabama, if they were to win the SEC championship game over Texas A&M or Georgia, they're going to jump Notre Dame, and they're probably going to get a bye because they're going to be the SEC champ. So that leads me to the scenario of Notre Dame versus Miami. And I know this has been a big topic, and I want to speak to this more of what could come of this scenario and why I'm looking at it as a situation where it's not just blindly Notre Dame should be ahead of Miami, Miami should be ahead of Notre Dame. I think if Miami continues to play like they did last week, which was in dominant fashion over NC State, a common opponent that Notre Dame has, that's where things could get pretty interesting here. So Miami plays Virginia Tech this week on the road, where they're, I think, a 17.5 point favorite. And then next week they play Pitt. If Miami goes to Pitt and wins in the fashion Notre Dame won, then I think the discussion becomes really heated between these two programs, because what has knocked Miami so much is the fact that they had not looked good since September, right? They had the loss to Louisville as a double-digit favorite. They had the loss at SMU as an 8.5-point favorite. If they are to get back to September form, which included the win over Notre Dame, the dominant win over South Florida, the win over Florida and Florida State, which doesn't look all that well, great, but whatever, then I think the discussion starts. So I do think if you're looking at a long shot, I think Miami still is very alive to get in the playoff. I bet them at around plus 470 last week. They're down to around 3-1. Because a couple things could happen, and they certainly could get into the discussion. And I think I'll just sum it with this, and this will be kind of my only thought regarding this situation from a college football fandom standpoint. I want both of them in, because I don't want any other team from the ACC. And what's frustrating about this whole situation, and I get it, if I were a Miami fan, I would be pissed. But what's frustrating about the whole situation, to be honest, as a college football fan, removing my Notre Dame fandom and everything else, is that Miami's the best team in the ACC. And it's frustrating to me that Cristobal and Miami did what they always do, which is they screwed up. Last year, all they had to do was beat Syracuse. And we get to see Cam Ward in the college football playoff. They lost to Syracuse. You could lose to Louisville. Just beat SMU. You could lose to SMU. Just beat Louisville. The ACC does not deserve an auto bid this year. Look at Georgia Tech. They should have lost to Boston College last week. But because of the tiebreak scenario and who Miami has lost to this year, the math is really challenging. Not impossible, but really challenging. I personally would love to see Miami in the playoff. And I would love to see Notre Dame in the playoff. Why? Because they're the two of the 12 best teams in college football. I don't have any interest of Georgia Tech or Virginia or SMU being in the college football playoff. I want Miami in the playoff because they're better than everyone in the ACC. But unfortunately, in the Cristobal era, they continue to do this. And it has led to this discussion, which team should get in, and the discord out there, all Notre Dame fans think Miami sucks and they've gotten worse. Every Miami fan has said Notre Dame has beaten however many Power Four teams and whatever. If you take a step back, they're two of the best 12 teams in college football, and I would love for both of them to be in the playoff. The world ain't like that. We'll see how this thing plays out. Notre Dame 12-1 to miss the playoff. There is multiple doomsday scenarios out there where the Irish ultimately miss out on the playoff. All right, real quickly, I wanted to run through some situational spots because we usually do that with Wes Reynolds on Wednesday. He'll be joining us for the full breakdown, as mentioned, on Thursday. Matt Heumann's coming up on the other side of our break here. But, you know, I love to look at the situational spots. So a couple of sandwich spots for this week. And this one, you might have to grow some chest hair in order to play this one. Georgia laying 44 against Charlotte. Last week, what a performance from the Georgia Bulldogs. And we'll talk to Brett Cianci about that performance and how it graded out amongst games this year per his game grader model. But you kill Texas, and then next week you play Georgia Tech, a rematch of last year's 7-overtime thriller in Athens. That game's going to be played in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and you're a 44-point favorite. There was a great nugget from Stuckey earlier this week. Kirby Smart, 0-15 against the spread as a favorite of more than 38 points. Do you have the manhood to take Georgia, or excuse me, to take Charlotte, who is just dreadful. They are so bad this year. Can you do it? Can you take Charlotte plus the 44? I don't know if I can. Maybe I will. I don't know if it'll ever be an official bet. The other game is Baylor taking on Arizona. And I wanted to do the simple math equation here as I go through my notes. So Baylor is a 7-point underdog at Arizona. And Arizona, very impressive last week, getting the win over Cincinnati on the road. And next week, they get the Territorial Cup, where they try to avenge the 49-7 loss to Arizona State. Arizona does not have a chance to make it to the Big 12 championship game. They are bowl eligible. So this spot seems a little sleepy. Now, the question you have to ask is, where's Baylor's head at after they've kind of seemingly fallen off the map here? They did have some empty calories last week in the loss to Utah. They put up some big numbers, 563 total yards. Sawyer Robertson threw for a ton of yards in that game. But I wanted to do the simple math equation. I did this last week with Navy and USF, comparing the lines for the two games those teams played at North Texas. So we got the math equation again here. October 25th, Baylor played at Cincinnati. Cincinnati was a 3.5-point favorite. Last week, Arizona was at Cincinnati, and that line closed 5. Now, the difference, of course, is that Arizona won that game and Baylor lost that game by multiple scores. But the market said within a span of 3 weeks that Baylor on a neutral is 1.5 points better than Arizona. Now you're going to upgrade Arizona, downgrade Baylor. But the number 7, that is a big difference from what the market told us those two teams were at Cincinnati and now what Arizona is at home. I think this number is a bit inflated, and I do think this is a tricky spot for Arizona coming off the big win and with Arizona State on deck. A couple of letdown spots this week. Where's South Florida's head at? After losing last week to Navy, they're not going to make the college football playoff. They're 21.5-point favorites at UAB. Speaking of having some chest hair and having to play that one, not saying it's an auto play, but just keep in mind, Texas, similar question. Where's their head at? They lose to Georgia. They're 17th in the rankings. They've got Texas A&M on deck. They could disrupt Texas A&M season next week. They got Arkansas coming to town. Arkansas, you know I can't quit Arkansas. As I stated last week, I'm Tim Murray, and I have an Arkansas problem. And thankfully, there was a late slide down in that game against LSU in which we were able to get the cover as my man Harlan Berry sliding down and getting us the cover there for Arkansas. But how about Arkansas real quickly, looking at some of their post-game win expectancies? Arkansas, according to SP Plus and their second order wins, should have 5.62 wins. They're 2-8. They have 4 losses this year with a 60%+ post-game win expectancy. They had an 81% post-game win expectancy against Memphis, lost that game 32-31. They had a 61.7% post-game win expectancy against Auburn, lost that game 33-24, 74.2% post-game win expectancy against Mississippi State, blew the fourth quarter lead, as I recall very well, and lost 38-35. And then last week, they actually had a post-game win expectancy of 64% against LSU. Are they just done, or are you going to get another fight from Arkansas? They have not lost by double digits in the SEC this year. The only loss they've had by double digits was against Notre Dame when they lost 56-13, and that ultimately led to the firing of Sam Pittman. Two other letdown spots, Duke, similar to Texas, and South Florida. Where are the Blue Devils' heads at? Duke laying 7 at North Carolina. I bet North Carolina plus 7. And then Oklahoma hosting Missouri, coming off of an amazing win. Now you're sitting there at 8. You're taking on Mizzou at home. Sleepy spot. Something to keep an eye on there. Missouri, obviously, The quarterback situation is one that we have to also keep a close eye on regarding Bo Prabula. I doubt he plays. Probably going to be Zollers again. Will Missouri be able to have success on the ground? Probably not going to run for three bills like they did last week for Ahmad Hardy against Mississippi State, but that is a massive letdown spot for Oklahoma, and certainly could look at the Missouri Tigers in that one. We'll talk about a look-ahead spot with humans in Michigan and Maryland. Two other games, Ohio State, 31.5-point favorite against Rutgers. Got to imagine Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith probably don't play in that game with Michigan on deck and the Big Ten championship against Indiana. And then Washington, Jekyll and Hyde team on the road this year. They're a 10.5-point favorite on the road at UCLA. They host hated rival Oregon the following week. Lay in double digits. At the Rose Bowl, final home game for UCLA. Obviously, it's been a tenuous season there for the Bruins. I got to know the status of Nico in that one before I play it, but I could be interested in the Bruins. All my best bets coming tomorrow on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast with Wes Reynolds. Matt Newman's in just a minute or two. But just a reminder, a shout out to our friends Rainbow Authentics are in town. I'm going to be jumping on with my friend Koo on Hawaii Sports Radio on Friday from Stadium Swim. But all our VSiN College Football Betting podcasts this year have been brought to you by Rainbow Authentics, the official source of game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for all of your favorite Hawaii student athletes. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With that exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics helps you look your best every single game day. RainbowAuthentics.com is where you can check out all of their gear. And like I said, some giveaways coming on the podcast, courtesy of our friends at Rainbow Authentics. And if any of you are in the Vegas area, I know this is last minute, but if you're in the Vegas area, we are doing a watch party at Circa on Thursday night for the Hawaii-Arizona State basketball game. That tip-off is at 9 Pacific, so I know last minute, but if any of you are around the area, want to hang out, get some swag from Rainbow Authentics, come on out to Circa as we'll be hanging out and watching Kanoa Leahy, my guy, call the game between Hawaii and Arizona State. All right, quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some Hawaii, UNLV, and other best bets from Matt Newman's, the old swap-a-roo this week. Matt on Wednesday, Wes on Thursday. Newman's up next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, a little switcheroo this week as Matt Newman's joining us on Wednesdays. We don't get the same name like Wednesdays with Wes. What a creative name that I thought of to have Wes Reynolds join us on a Wednesday. But we're going to have Wednesdays with Matt. Brett Ciancia will join us here in a little bit. Matt, you will be on assignment heading on the road here in a little bit. But it gives us maybe a little bit more time to break down a game that, as you could tell from the garb that I'm wearing, I'm excited. Hawaii and UNLV Friday night. This game will be on FS1, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific time. And we've seen this number kind of bounce around a little bit. Still threes out in the market. There was a 3.5 at a couple of shops for a while, but those have gone away. You're starting to see some over money come into the market. But if you want over, 64.5 still out there at DraftKings. If you want the three, plenty of shops still have the three. What do you make of this spot with the Rainbow Warriors coming to the Ninth Island to take on UNLV Friday night?
Well, I'm disappointed I missed the 3.5. I was surprised I was out there. I know Circa had that a couple times briefly, but I did not get it. I got Hawaii plus 3, over 64.5 is a total. You and I have been talking about this total for a while when you watch UNLV's defense break down so often. And if you look at UNLV in most of the major defensive categories, ranked 100th or worst, And I think Mike Alajado's and his talented group of speed receivers are going to take advantage of this. I'd be really surprised if they don't. Over the last five games, Hawaii's 4-1. Alejandro, 358.8 yards per game, and Hawaii, 39 points per game over that stretch. So this should be a Hawaii offense is really going to stretch the UNLV defense, and I'd be surprised if that's not the case on a Friday night. You're going to be out there. I'm going to be in the Bahamas. This is the first time, really, I'm not going to be in Vegas for a football Friday night in years. I can't even remember the last time, but like I said, I got to leave town for my mom's 80th birthday party. She only turns 80 once, Tim, so I'm not allowed to skip this trip. So I go to the Bahamas this week. I'll be back on Saturday, then a quick trip to Maui for the Invitational. I wish I could be out there Friday night for this game, but you and I have been talking about this game for a while. And I think it's going to be a good one. Should be entertaining. Look, you don't have to worry about rain this time. The last two games I've been at, yep. San Diego State, Hawaii, and Boise, Aztecs, it rained all night. It rained for hours. And you got perfect conditions, a fast track in Vegas. And I don't see why this game should not be high scoring unless, you know, you get quarterbacks who are throwing picks. If you have long drives and empty possessions, missed field goals or things like that. But UNLV's 8-2. Five of those wins are by one score. You know, you can live on luck for a long time. Look at the Chicago Bears. They're doing it too. But eventually that luck's going to run out. I think Hawaii is the better team on both sides of the ball. Hopefully they show it Friday night. Hawaii's also off a bye. I think the bye is going to be a good thing for them this time. And with UNLV off that two overtime win against Utah State, where the Aggies should have won the game. They missed a couple of field goals they should have made. I think the situation, everything sets up well for Hawaii and the over.
Yeah, no, a lot of that, I echo those sentiments. We'll talk more about it tomorrow as well. But you look at the way Timmy Chang's running this offense right now, Matt, and, you know, you and I got to see him up close and personal week zero, and the offense is humming right now. Everyone's healthy, which I think is massive. You know, you saw early on Mike Alejandro being a little bit dinged up, and Pifeli Ashlock. I was talking to our buddy Mike Kawazoe on Wednesday, actually on Tuesday at Circa, as he's in town for the game. And he said, look, Pifeli Ashlock kind of sets up everything for this offense at the wide receiver position. So can't wait to see it. Curious to see how many stops Hawaii will be able to get, but it should be a really fun one. Probably a really good game to live bet too, Matt, because of the potential swings in this game. We'll run through the rest of your best bets, Matt, on Saturday here in a moment, but the big game of the week is USC and Oregon. Oregon coming in at number 7 in the laid off playoff rankings. They went out, they're in, they're going to host a playoff game. Their lone loss, of course, coming to Indiana, but they've got to take care of business down the stretch. They've got USC this week, and then they wrap up on the road against rival Washington. You know, what do you make of this spot this week where you're seeing 9.5 right now on Wednesday? We've seen some double digits show up. We know Lincoln Riley has struggled on the road. Do you think the struggles continue for the Trojans up in Eugene on Saturday?
I do. You're talking about 8-2 USC team. That's 8-2 is probably what the Trojans deserve to be. But look, they had a tough loss at Illinois in a game they easily could have won. Tough loss at Notre Dame. They're right there to win that game in South Bend. So this USC team's pretty good. And I thought they were going to be better than most expect this season. But where does Lincoln Riley have his issues? Definitely on the road. And I think they're going to run into an Oregon Ducks team here. It's well prepared, and it's probably a little bit stronger on the offensive and defensive lines. And, you know, if you think back to the Indiana-Oregon game, that's the one time where I've seen Fernando Mendoza, well, at Oregon and Penn State, didn't look very good for long stretches of the Penn State game. But at Oregon, remember, Mendoza threw the pick six, and it looked like all the momentum had shifted, and the Ducks were going to take control, you thought, at that point, and probably win that game. And that's what impressed me most about Indiana, is that the Hoosiers were able to overcome that and come back and win. But this Oregon team is really good at home, and Riley has not been very good on the road. And he's got a quarterback in Jaden Maiava, a lot of times puts the ball up for grabs. He's got a couple of really talented receivers, Mekhi Lemon and Jacoby Lane. And a lot of times you just want to let those guys make a play, throw the ball up and let them make a play. Well, if he does that too often against a stuck defense, they're going to make him pay. So both these teams, ironically, Tim, as you pointed out in the show last night, are off games against Iowa, ugly games against Iowa. Ducks in Iowa City pulled out in the late field goal. And then the Trojans in L.A. last week in the rain. And they find a way to come back from a 2-touchdown deficit and win it. I was going to play Oregon here at 7. That's what I was hoping for, 7. You always can't get what you wish for. And this number is more than 7. I'm going to leave it alone. I might have Oregon on some sort of money line parlay or something like that if I can find a price around 325. But I don't want to lay the points. I think Oregon is probably going to win this game by 10 or more. But this is typically not a game. Not the price range I like to play.
Yeah, you look at the look ahead line was 7. It's out to 9.5, as you alluded to, even touching 10 in a couple of spots. One other game I just want to get your thoughts on before we get into your bets for the week is Missouri and Oklahoma. You know, we talked about this game on primetime last night as a letdown spot for Oklahoma. And now all they got to do, Matt, win out, and they're going to be hosting a playoff game more than likely. They've got Missouri and LSU both at home. They were fortunate, but they got the win nonetheless, despite a wild discrepancy in yardage. Missouri's a team that you've talked about a lot this year. You wrote them up in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. You've got a big position on their win total over. At worst, you're going to get a push there with the Tigers. I know the quarterback situation's murky. Bo Prabula, I believe, is participating, but more than likely it will be Zollers again for Missouri. Do you think Missouri's a live dog here on the road in Norman on Saturday?
I do, and it has a lot to do with the spot and the Sooners win at Georgia. Excuse me, Sooners win at Alabama over the weekend. Because when you anytime you have a big win like that, you have to be careful of a letdown. I know every coach will tell you the same thing. After a big win, beware of the letdown the next week. And I'm sure Brent Venables is talking to his guys all week about this. You know, you can't be thinking about the Alabama win. Focus on Missouri. It's a lot easier said than done. I think maybe the first half here, you look at Missouri too. This is what I'm considering. It's not going to be on my best bet list for this podcast today, but I'm definitely considering this. So Missouri, like you said, over 7 was my best win total play. And I was starting to get starting to sweat that a little bit before last week's game against Mississippi State, especially when I saw the Bear, Chris Felica, picked Mississippi State. Missouri took care of business in that game. Matt Zollers, the freshman quarterback, who stepped in and looked pretty good against Vandy and then looked awful in his first start. He looked better. I thought he looked a little better last week. And Missouri's defensive front is nasty, by the way. So it's this is kind of what I like about Missouri. And I like Bo Prabula, the quarterback, the transfer from Penn State, but he's been out for a while. That's one thing you hope doesn't happen when you bet a win total. Like you said, I've at least got a push here. So Missouri's defensive front, Ahmad Hardy, a running back who might be the best in the SEC. If you can run the ball and you got a great defensive front 7, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games. You're just going to need the quarterback to come through. So that's going to be the key for this game, Tim. Can Matt Zollers do it on the road against this Oklahoma defense and Brent Venables, who's an outstanding DC? That's the part that concerns me the most. I don't know if Zollers is going to be able to make the plays to help Missouri get over the top and win this game. But I will take a look at the Tigers here. First half and maybe something for the game, because I think Sooners are in a vulnerable spot after the big win at Alabama.
Well, let's get into your best bets and let's jump. Let's stay in the SEC, Matt. Florida and Tennessee. You know, last week, Florida, if you looked at the line against Ole Miss, it was wild. You know, it got as high as 17 last Sunday, closed around 11.5, and ultimately the steam, at least the late steam, was accurate on the Florida Gators. You wonder, hey, has this team quit? And we didn't see quit. They were winning going into the fourth quarter. And now they're at home, night game in the swamp, Matt. They're catching 4 against Tennessee. And I'm not going to say this is a look ahead for Tennessee because, you know, it's a rivalry in itself, but they do have that big game against Vanderbilt next week as well, where they're hosting the Commodores. But what do you make of this spot here? Florida catching 4 at home against the Vols.
Yeah, I didn't even really consider the look ahead because when you have a rivalry like Florida-Tennessee, I don't think any players are looking past that at all. It's 7-3 versus 3-7. I know Florida is not, by definition, a really good team at 3-7. But, Tim, look at Tennessee's resume, and you know it probably off the top of your head. Tell me how many really big wins, quality wins, the Vols have on that resume this season.
Not many. Kentucky.
A Kentucky game is
lost to Georgia.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Lost to Georgia, lost to Bama, lost to Oklahoma. Yeah. Their best win would be the dominant win on the road at Kentucky. I believe that was the week after Kentucky beat Florida, if I remember. Or no, the week after Kentucky lost to Texas, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. I think they were catching Kentucky. I thought it a good time off that overtime loss to Texas, where Kentucky probably should have won that game. Now, that was an impressive performance on the road against Mark Stoops' defense to put up that kind of number, to drop 50 on the Kentucky defense. But I don't see that the Vols have an impressive body of work here. And I don't think they deserve to be four and a half point favorites in the Swamp. I don't want to say a false favorite because they probably deserve to be a slight favorite, maybe something like 1.5, which is what I made the number on this game. Volunteers have not won in the Swamp in Gainesville since 2003. Think about that. Billy Gonzalez is the interim coach for Florida, and I do think these players want to play for him. They want to win for him. It's the first home game, first true home game in over a month for Florida. Urban Meyer is going to be honored. It's going to be a big day for Florida football, and I think you're going to see an A-plus or an A type of effort from this Florida team. You know, we questioned, did the Gators quit in that loss in Kentucky? They came back and played well against Ole Miss, Tim. They led that 24-20 going into the fourth quarter, and if not for some officiating help for Ole Miss, Florida might have won that game. But DJ Lagway is getting one of his star receivers back this week. They're getting another starter back on defense. I talked to Brian Edwards down there in Gainesville, and Brian is he's a Florida guy, but he's not always pro-Florida because, as you know, as being a Notre Dame guy, sometimes you're more critical of your favorite team. But I told him, I said, I got a good feeling about Florida this week. And he said he does, too. He's got a good feeling about Florida. So I'm rolling with the Gators here. I bet this is a plus 4.5. I think there might be a 4.5 at BetMGM, but we'll call it Florida plus 4 for now.
All right, let's get to a game where, you know, situational spots are so important, and we talk about them all the time. You know, you've got your letdowns, you've got your sandwich spots, and you've also got your look-ahead spots. And, you know, next week is the rivalry weekend, right? And you look at Michigan, and they've got Ohio State, and they're going to be licking their chops trying to get their fifth straight win over the Buckeyes. And now you got to go on the road to Maryland. And Maryland, you know, I was curious to see where their head was at. And then we get news this week that they're sticking with Mike Locksley. They're standing with him, and he's going to roll back. And sometimes that's a positive thing. I think Mike Locksley is well-liked in that locker room. Obviously, they've dropped 6 in a row, but they're a 14-point home dog number at DraftKings and Circa. And I think you and I are thinking of the same thing here, that the Terps could be, I don't want to say live, but this could be kind of a sluggish performance from Michigan in this spot.
Yeah, no question. Every year, I like to at least look at it, and most times play against Michigan and Ohio State the week before that rivalry game, because there's no doubt that's a look-ahead spot for those two teams. And you notice, Tim, the Big Ten does not set up really tough opponents for Michigan and Ohio State the week before they play each other. You're not getting Penn State or Wisconsin or something like that the week before traditionally on the schedule. So the Big Ten is aware of this. They don't want to set up Michigan State and Wisconsin, or Michigan State and Ohio State, with tough games the week before. Bryce Underwood, I thought he looked a lot better last week in the first half. He still tries to rocket every pass to a receiver, whether it's even if it's a short 5-yard play. But he had 2 interceptions that allowed the Purple Cats back into that game, and that was a tough one. Not saying that Northwestern deserved to win it, because they probably didn't, but I had Northwestern plus 13. I had Northwestern on the money line, and you lose that game on a late field goal, 24-22. The way that the result did not surprise me at all. I thought Northwestern was going to be in the hunt to win that game. Underwood, 280 passing yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Again, Tim, we're talking about a team that's played 10 games. Michigan's 8-2. Bryce Underwood has 7 touchdown passes on the season. You don't have a lot of playmakers on this offense. Don't forget, it's Justice Haynes, the leading rusher. I talked about this last week on the pod. Justice Haynes is out. He had foot surgery. He's hoping to come back for the Buckeyes game. Jordan Marshall, is a pretty good back. He went for 142 yards on the ground against Northwestern. I read a report that Marshall might not play in this game against Maryland this week. So the key is, can you find enough value in the underdog here to play it? And I think what you said about Mike Locksley is the key. If Locksley had 1 foot out the door, if it looked like he was going to be fired, this team might quit. I would not play Maryland here. But Locksley's coming back. I think he's a player's coach. You got to think that a lot of these guys like him, want to play for him. And well, there's 14 out there at DraftKings. Give me Maryland plus 14. The basis of this is obviously wanting to play against Michigan and Ohio State in look-ahead spots.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, earlier in the season, you had a couple devastating blown leads by Maryland at home, Washington, Nebraska, UCLA. The last couple of games haven't been pretty, but I think you're going to get a decent effort from them the last two games, as I think a bowl would matter to them. And certainly they'll be a favorite against Michigan State next week. All right, two more, Matt, before we let you run. And let's go out west. We got two late night games. We'll start with the your classic ACC rivalry, Matt. 7:30 Eastern, Stanford and Cal. You know, when you think ACC, you think the game between Cal and Stanford. Across the board, three. If you want to play a juiced up 3.5 at time of record, looks like FanDuel has that. Look, Stanford has been playing pretty well in the role of the underdog, and who the hell knows what to expect from Cal. And Matt, is Cal maybe a little inflated because of that win against Louisville 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, Tim, we've talked about that on the show, too. How in the hell did Jeff Brohm lose as basically a 20-point home favorite to this Cal team? Seriously. I mean, that's inexcusable. Cal's not that good. And that's been proven over time here. I think Cal getting a little respect here as a 3-point favorite at Stanford. Look, Stanford's close to full strength right now. Pretty good health at this point in the season. They did switch quarterbacks. Gil Bronson went to the bench in the game at North Carolina, and they switched to Brown. Elijah Brown, who is a 6'2 freshman from Southern California, he stepped in against North Carolina. I thought really played well considering the offensive line broke down. He was under pressure against Bill Belichick's defense for a lot of that game. Brown went 27 for 39 against Carolina. 284 yards with a TD and a pick. He was sacked, I think, 8 or 9 times. I believe 9 times in that game, the 20-15 loss. So I think that's something he's obviously got to be better at, getting the ball out a little bit quicker because he took way too many sacks. But again, his first start, and I thought he showed his talent. Maybe that's a positive. But at the same time, what Stanford really wants to do here is established the run. And we saw that in Hawaii. When Stanford started to control that game on the ground, Micah Ford seemed unstoppable. And then they made the mistake of letting Gil Bronson throw it. He threw the pick, and the whole thing turned around in Hawaii's favor. I think Micah Ford's going to be a workhorse in this game for the Cardinal. He had 17 carries, 68 yards against North Carolina. Cole Tabb, another running back, is Cole Tabb and Cedric Irvin are getting carries too. I think Frank Reich is just going to try to pound this ball at the Golden Bears defense and then let Elijah Brown make some more plays. You can't put him in a situation like he was in at North Carolina where they knew he was going to pass. He was under pressure and he took a bunch of sacks. Look, I backed Stanford under its win total of 3.5 for the season. Tim, that play is obviously in jeopardy. So I'm going to have to, you know, hope that Stanford does not win this game outright, but I do like Stanford here. I actually played a little bit on North Carolina last week to get some of that back. but let's see, it's 4 losses in the last 5 games. Stanford's 3-7. Home game against Cal is definitely winnable for the Cardinal. And then the home finale against Notre Dame that you're probably going to be at, the late kickoff, Saturday, November 29th, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. You going to be there?
I will not. No? I will be watching on TV. I will not be there. No. Well, thought about it, but that will not be there.
You know, the win total, whatever, at this point, if I lose it, so be it. But I'm playing Stanford here plus 3. I think Stanford's got a real shot to win this game. And this probably should be, I think this should be a pick'em game, not a situation where Cal's a 3-point favorite. Like you said, I think Cal's getting a little bit more respect because of the upset win at Louisville.
All right. We got to get a late night game for you. So let's get 10:30 Eastern time. I gave this out on primetime on Tuesday. We've got a lot of commonality this week, and we'll run through my official plays tomorrow on the podcast. But let's go Utah State, Fresno State. Right now, if you like the favorite, you can get a 2.5 out there with Fresno. If you like the dog, you could take Utah State +3 at DraftKings and the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas. What are you doing with Utah State at Fresno?
Gut-wrenching loss for Utah State a week ago. That team's 5-5 after that double overtime loss at UNLV. And, Tim, when you look at the numbers from that game, Utah State had 434 total yards and didn't do much wrong except for special teams blunders, right? Missed field goals, had no turnovers in the game. A really clean offensive game for the Aggies. And Bryson Barnes was threw 256 yards, ran for 124. You can't ask for much more than what he did, but you missed a couple of field goals you should have made, and you let the Rebels off the hook and lose that. I think the Aggies bounce back here. They're fighting for 6 wins for Bronco Mendenhall, and they're facing a Fresno offense that's really fading fast. And you know, there was a point this season where I thought Fresno might be a team on the rise in the Mountain West, but the quarterback play is not there. It is there for the Aggies. I think you're going to get a motivated team off the loss. There's a couple threes out there, and I think this another game, Tim, I think the home favorite should not be laying a full 3. It should be something like 1.5, or this could even be a pick 'em type of game. I expect Utah State to win this. I think you do too, but I'll take the +3 as an insurance policy. Utah State +3 at Fresno.
Carson Conklin, 12 of 27 last week for 95 yards and a touchdown for Fresno State in their win. Fresno State's still alive for the Mountain West Championship, but I agree. I think this is a Utah State spot where Bronco Mendenhall gets the outright win, and the wackiness in that conference continues. Matt, before we let you run, also, we always like to sum things up. Nice.
I was just going to mention, don't you think there's a lot of urgency here for Bronco Mendenhall and Utah State? They want to get to 6 wins in a bowl, and their final game is against Boise State, so it's going to be a tougher game. I'm sure they'd love to take care of business on the road to Fresno this week. All right, that's it. Go ahead.
No doubt. I think the bowl eligibility is something always to keep an eye on. Don't want to auto bet it, but I think Bronco Mendenhall year one definitely is motivation there. It is worth noting, New Mexico last year with 5 wins got bet up to like a 6.5-point favorite at Hawaii because everyone thought they were just going to roll Hawaii in a spot there, and they lost that game.
Right,
so,
right.
But we didn't know about Mike Alahato, and he showed out in that game. Matt, let's wrap it up as we like to do with you. Let's do a little best bet recap, run through your plays and where you sit on the year.
All right, Tim, off of a couple of strong winning weeks here, 5-1 last week, 39-27-3, and hopefully got another winning week here. Hawaii +3, Hawaii UNLV over 64.5. That game's Friday night in Vegas. Maryland +14, Florida +4. Stanford +3 and Utah State +3. I'm going to roll with those 6 plays for now. I tell you what, as the week goes on, I'm starting to like more and more games on this card. And I know you're going to have probably a deeper list of best bets. And some of those you mentioned on the show Thursday night, I like as well. But I'll roll with those 6 for the podcast for now.
All right, 11-3 over the last 2 weeks. You've been rolling. Let's keep it up. Much appreciated, Matt. Safe travels. Wish Mama Humans a very happieth 80th birthday, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, you bet. Thanks.
There he is, Matt Humans. Quick break. When we come back, Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Previews. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as always, welcoming in Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, Pick 6 Plus, one of the go-to essentials each and every week for me, taking a look at the week that was, looking ahead to the upcoming week. And Brett, what we like to do, taking a look at what you put out there from Pick 6 Plus, is take a look back at the week that was. And, you know, We get the new batch of rankings. Oklahoma jumps up to number 8, and I think deservedly so. You go on the road, you get a big win over Alabama. But something we talked about on Monday, just looking at some of the post-game win expectancies on this particular game, look, got to give them credit. They got the win, but you kind of are in line with, you know, Bill Conley with some of the numbers not really adding up on the Oklahoma win over Alabama.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tim. And absolutely, I agree. And it's twofold. I think first, you got to credit Oklahoma. All that matters at the end of the day is a score on the scoreboard. They won the game outright, 23-21 in Tuscaloosa. So credit there. They are deserved to be a projected playoff team right now. But if you're looking at it from an advanced stats perspective, a forward-looking perspective, power ratings-wise, Alabama had the better game. It's one of those rare cases where in my game grader formula, the losing team had the better grade. It's because they outgained them by 200 yards. They came up small in the red zone, unfortunately. Missed a field goal. Oklahoma hit a 53-yarder, Tate Sandell. And then really the name of the game in this one was turnovers and timely turnovers, too. That 87-yard pick six is one of the highlights of the season for Oklahoma. And that really flipped the ball game. So, you know, it's one of those things. You credit Oklahoma. If they play this game 10 times, I think Alabama wins it 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10. But the one that counted was the Sooners win. Now, that muddies the water a little bit for this playoff field. And now I think you have Oklahoma projected in there if they were to go 10-2, sharing a spot with Alabama. So it's a crowded field because of that result.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, I opened up the podcast talking about that situation. And you think to Alabama being behind Notre Dame, and if they win the SEC championship, they certainly would jump over Notre Dame. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. And once again, to your point about Oklahoma, this tweet from Jim Dunaway over the weekend, I thought was pretty fascinating. These are the scoring drives: 23 yards, pick six, 31 yards, 41 yards, 22 yards, and they get the win. But it's a huge win. One of the biggest wins of the year, no doubt. I wanted to stay in the SEC. We'll circle back to Oklahoma here in just a moment, because their game against Missouri, I think, has a lot of us interested in how that game plays out. Is it a letdown spot for Oklahoma? But it feels like Georgia is kind of rounding into form at the right time, right? They're done with SEC play. They play Charlotte this week. Then next week, they get Georgia Tech in that rivalry game. You know, I'm sure there are Georgia fans out there that would much rather have the 5 seed and play a home playoff game against North Texas or, you know, Tulane, as opposed to having a bye and playing the SEC championship. But what did your numbers spit out, Brett, on their performance against Texas? And the one thing that I look at a lot, and I've referenced it on this pod a couple of times, is your game grade over the last 4 games. Where is Georgia at over their last 4 games as well?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I love my last 4 number because you look at the whole season, that's important too, but these teams are different than they played in August and September, and you want to look at a kind of a heat check, how they're playing the last 4 games, and Georgia is heating up at the right time, right into form, you know, right ready for playoffs here coming up, because you think back to September, they had a toss-up game against Tennessee that was 44-41, that great overtime game, lost to Alabama, so you're sitting there 3-1 with 2 close games, and they've really been a fourth quarter team the whole year, and it's been Gunnar Stockton, very resilient in the fourth quarter. They had that goal line stand against Auburn, controversial as it was, but they handled them in the second half in the fourth quarter. Florida was a tight one, but finally these last 2 weeks, we've seen some margin here. Mississippi State, they blew them out 41-21, but in this fourth quarter against Texas, really they opened it up. It was 14-10 heading into the final frame. They cash in a touchdown, the surprise onside kick by Kirby Smart. How about that call, and then just open up the floodgates. 21-0 in the fourth quarter alone. Stockton, 5 touchdowns, 4 through the air, 1 running it. He looks, he's rounding into Heisman caliber almost late in the season, a late push for him. So, Georgia, the right time of year, they're clicking. They've always had the defense, but now it looks like this offense too is keeping pace. So they're going to take care of Charlotte this week. I have them projected by 2 touchdowns to beat Georgia Tech in the finale. So you're looking at an 11-1 team poised for a home game in Athens for the playoff.
Yeah, you look at your season-long game graders, and you have Georgia's performance over Texas at number six. So pretty darn impressive what we saw from Georgia this weekend. And I always love looking at, you know, what were the best performances based off your game grader for the entire season. You know, another game that was impressive over the weekend, you had Miami and NC State. You had graded that 107, that dominant performance by the Canes. Certainly feels like they're kind of getting back to maybe their September form, which leads into the discussion of, you know, are they in, are they out situation there. But, you know, another team that you saw in person 2 weeks ago, you've got them number two in your last four games. You've got them number three for the full season. You are very high on Texas Tech, and it feels like the committee's kind of coming around to your side right now. Committee has Texas Tech now at number five, as this has just been kind of sheer dominance every single week outside of that blip when they didn't have their starting quarterback against Arizona State.
Yeah, and if you've been following along the podcast and following along Pick 6 Plus, you've seen Texas Tech in my top five pretty much since like week three. It's been absolute blowouts every week, every win by more than 20 points, plus 200 yardage in almost every game. They did have the loss to Arizona State with the backup, like you said, with Will Hammond in there. But at full strength, this is a national title contender. I believe that at least defensively. This defense could be the best in the country. You have a Heisman candidate, Jacob Rodriguez, there at linebacker. It's rare to win no one's ever won the Heisman as a linebacker. It's rare to even be a finalist. You look at Monte Teo finishing mm-hmm. second in 2012. Bosworth back in the 70s and 80s for Oklahoma was, I think, fourth. So it's really rare. This guy does it all. He's got a stat line to match Monte Teo. And then it's not just Rodriguez. In this front seven, this front four, you have David Bailey off the edge. He's the nation's sack leader. Lee Hunter, this nose guard, his nose tackle is unbelievable. Disruptor there in the middle. So this defense is for real. They have athletes on the outsides on offense. Cameron Dickey, a running back, so a workhorse. So, yeah, they're blowing everybody out. This week, another one, 48-9 over UCF. They even put Rodriguez in a quarterback to get a little Heisman moment there at Wildcat quarterback for a rushing touchdown. So keep an eye on Texas Tech. I think this is the strongest Big 12 team we've seen in a long time and could really make some noise in the playoff bracket.
The tweet you put out earlier this week, I knew it. I knew he had caused a lot of turnovers. I didn't realize it was this insane. You tweeted it out. Most forced fumbles or most forced turnovers from the AP top 10. Texas Tech 25, Indiana 22, Notre Dame 19, Alabama 16, Jacob Rodriguez 13. I mean, yeah, unreal.
Yeah, he himself would rank 50th in the country amongst all teams. So almost a top 25 team himself. And watching them in person too, they fly to the ball. They're very physical. They're disruptive. They create all these turnovers. Like you said, number one in the country, I think, tied with SMU in takeaways. So just a really, really strong defense. And keep an eye on them. I mean, I think they're 9-1. 10-1 against the spread. Again, that only loss was with the backup quarterback. So they're an absolute machine. I keep riding it. I mean, the numbers are loving them, and they're making us look smart.
Yeah, I mean, the only bet I've placed on or against Texas Tech was the game that you went to when they played BYU, and really that score could have been more lopsided than it was. 29-7, the final score. And you know, that's the one thing. You think about where these rankings are and what could cause chaos. I think it would be a BYU win in the Big 12 championship or a Utah win. Like if one of those teams, you really could get March Madness style bid thief type of situation. So something to keep an eye on there. But I want to circle back to Oklahoma, and, you know, it's college football. And if you follow this sport, you know, weird stuff tends to happen. And Oklahoma, massive win. They jump Notre Dame and Alabama into the top 10. They're in the projected field. Right now, they would host a playoff game. But they got to finish this thing off. And they got an 11 a.m. local kick on Saturday against Missouri. And Missouri, of course, coming off of Ahmad Hardy's 300 rushing yard performance. What do you make of this spot on Saturday, Brett, with Oklahoma hosting Missouri? You know, I talk about letdown spots. I certainly think this characterizes as a letdown spot here for Oklahoma. The question is, does Missouri have enough firepower offensively to pull the outright upset in Norman?
This is the definition of a letdown spot. I mean, they went in there, had their win of the season, their statement win in Tuscaloosa. Now they're getting all the playoff buzz, and rightfully so. But you still have to play Missouri. And what I like about Missouri is they really upgraded their roster again in the transfer portal. It's a couple years in a row now, I think three top 10 transfer hauls in a row. And you can say that and you can look at it on paper. But when you see this team live and watch them, I mean, that's what five-star transfers look like. It's the defensive line. These freaks in the trenches, receivers on the outside are emerging as number one threats. And Ahmad Hardy, we talked about him, the workhorse there. If he gets tired, Jamal Roberts comes in. He's just as physical. So I saw a stat where Hardy, I think he's got 1,000 yards rushing after contact, something unbelievable like that. So they have their hands full here. This is not the Missouri of old. This is a team that can almost go toe-to-toe talent-wise with them. So I think if you're the playoff committee, this might be their way out of a tough decision. They can get an upset here in Norman. I think it's going to be closer than that 7.5 spread. I have Missouri covering. I have it by about 4 or 5 points, Oklahoma, so some value with Missouri. The big question is a quarterback. And Bill Prabula, it's still questionable whether he's going to return. They are night and day with him in or out. So last week they had everybody else step up, like you said, with Hardy at running back. They had two defensive scorers on defense. So I don't know how much of that's going to be there, but I like Missouri to cover here, and this could be your upset of the week.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list. We'll get the official plays from me and Wes tomorrow. We obviously heard from Matt already on his plays for this upcoming week, and the game of the week is going to be Oregon and USC. It's kind of been funny, Brett, because the last 3 weeks we've had games where you look at the point spread and you say, huh, that's interesting. You know, that number seems a little bit high. You look at Cincinnati going to Utah, the number was double digits. Utah wins and covers. BYU, Texas Tech, number double digits. Texas Tech wins and covers. Last week, Notre Dame, Pitt, double digits. Notre Dame wins and covers. Maybe this is that spot here this weekend. Oregon has been bet up to, you know, around a 10-point favorite right now, 9.5 in most spots. What do your numbers spit out for USC and Oregon, and what is the pathway for USC to go to Eugene and get the upset?
Yeah, well, I think with USC, they showed a lot to me last week when they were down 21-7 against Iowa. And usually anyone that falls behind two touchdowns against Iowa, they're stuck. I think it was PJ Fleckty, Minnesota's head coach, called Iowa a boa constrictor, the way they can just suffocate a team when they have a lead like that. And for USC to then lead five straight scoring drives, phenomenal job. Got out of there with a W. So a similar performance, just like Oregon's survival against Iowa. So those look the same to me. I think 10 points is too high, or it's even more than that now. I think that's too high. I have it by about a touchdown for Oregon. What I like in this game is two really elite offenses. Top five quarterback ratings with Dante Moore at Oregon, Jaden Maiava at USC. The difference might be on defense, where Oregon also has a top 10 defense to match their offense. USC has struggled at times defensively. So that might be why you're seeing a double-digit line. I still like USC to cover. Be wary, though, because they are 2-5 against the spread in conference play this year. So a lot of that had to do with travel. For whatever reason, USC really struggles with these travel games. This time they're staying at least on the West Coast there. So I think that's mitigated, but I'm going to go USC to cover. And if they were to win outright, then you have a whole another bracket problem. I think USC might be in there for a bid and maybe knock Oregon out. So little playoff eliminator happening up here amongst old Pac-12 rivals.
Looking at a game that's a similar point spread. And look, last week I thought Penn State would be emotionally drained going into that game in East Lansing, and they were able to pull away and win by 18 against Michigan State. So, you know, I was impressed by what I saw from that Penn State team. You saw how, you know, emotional it was post-game for the interim Terry Smith. And now they're back in their, you know, friendly confines in Happy Valley, taking on a Nebraska team. TJ Lateef, was fine in the win over UCLA, just a couple weeks ago. They're coming off a bye week here. Number sits at 9.5. There were some 10s out there earlier in the week, but Penn State, pretty hefty favorite here. What do you make of this spot here in your backyard?
Yeah, this line jumped out to me. I thought that this was too high. First with Penn State, they finally got that monkey off their back. They broke that six-game losing streak, avoided their first seven-game losing streak. Would have been their first in 100 years. So they got the W. A little bit closer than that final score would suggest. It's 28-10, but it was close late, and they got a couple late scores to beat Michigan State, a winless team in the Big Ten. They haven't shown me anything from the past game with Ethan Grunkmeyer. Katron Allen is heating up their running back, but the defense is nowhere near as elite as we had forecasted. So if you're looking at the last four games number that we'd like to reference, Penn State checks in at number 39, Nebraska number 42. They're almost even in the last four games, almost even in the full season when you look at it. So I have this by about a field goal, given Penn State some home field advantage. So 10 points seems really high. 9 points seems really high. I like the wild card factor of TJ Latif because he did enough to show that he's competent against UCLA. He led four straight scoring drives to start the game. They got the win. But now you go into a bye week with mad scientist Dana Holgorsen. I think you're going to see some new wrinkles that Penn State's not ready for coming off this bye week. And he's going to be more confident now with two full weeks of first team reps. So I think Nebraska's going to shock them and go in there and get the W, if not at least cover that 10-point spread.
You know, one game in looking at the last four game numbers in your stat packet that jumped out to me, I've already bet it. And look, I bet North Carolina last week. It didn't work out well. They, you know, settled for a lot of field goals, had a couple of blocked as well. Wake Forest gets that late touchdown to maybe make it a little bit more deceptive there. I have a hard time kind of figuring out Duke this year. And, you know, once again, I think letdown spots can happen after losses as well. And I'm very curious to know where Duke's mindset is after kind of having their hopes dashed. So, you know, looking at the last four games, clearly Duke is not playing well per your game grader. What do you see in this matchup, UNC and Duke? Because I personally, even though Chapel Bill is out there watching co-ed cheerleading competitions that his girlfriend's a part of, I still like North Carolina here as a touchdown home underdog.
Same here. And this one did pop out as well to me. I have Duke by about 2 or 3 points. So with that line at a full touchdown, I think there's some value with the home UNC. You're right about the last four, because I think we still picture Duke as that high flying September, October team with Darian Mensa lighting up the scoreboard and then still being in contention for an ACC spot. But now that the dust has settled a little bit, they're 5-5. They're out of the ACC hunt with some losses, some bad losses here. The UConn loss, UVA, they lost by 17. Really wasn't competitive there. If you look at the last four, they're all the way down at 53rd out of the 68 Power Four teams in the last four games. UNC is actually top 40. A little bit interesting there because they have a couple losses packed in, but a close loss to Virginia. Remember, that was that 2-point conversion down at the, obviously at the goal line to win. And then Cal, they lost by 3. So yeah, I think UNC is turning a little bit of a corner. I'm not calling for anything crazy, but I think that they're a competent team and Duke's just in free fall. So I agree with you there. I think there's some value with UNC.
You know, rivalry game at home. I do think UNC still cares about a bowl game. You know, they need to win out in order to get to a bowl game. They got NC State next week. All right, before we let you run, Brett, anything else jump out to you as we head into week 13 of the college football season?
A random one that caught my eye was Arizona versus Baylor. And this is a Baylor defense that's just in free fall. They're really struggling. Dave Aranda is supposed to be this defensive guru. It just hasn't clicked at all. One of the worst defenses in the country just got blown out by 30 plus to Utah. And then meanwhile, Arizona, this is a team no one's talking about. They're 7-3. Noah Fifita already broke Nick Foles' passing record in school history there. And then it's really this defense that caught my eye. Top 10 in my numbers on defense, Arizona. Number 5 pass defense. And they're going up against the nation's passing champ, Sawyer Robertson. So I think Baylor coming off a physical blowout loss. I think Arizona is a little bit underrated here. So I see that sitting at 6.5 points. I think they win at home by more than a touchdown. So I like Arizona here over Baylor.
All right. Big one next week for the Wildcats trying to avenge a embarrassing loss last year to Arizona State in the Territorial Cup. Brett, always appreciate it, sir. And once again, let people know how they can get their hands on Pick Six Plus.
Yeah, thanks so much. Pick6Previews.com, Pick6 Plus. I'm on Twitter. It's Pick6Previews. Go check it out, a weekly stats and info package. Send me in your feedback. I appreciate all the listeners checking in. And if I don't talk to you next Wednesday, have a great Thanksgiving. All the followers and listeners, enjoy that rivalry Saturday and Friday, my favorite days of the year. So thanks again, Tim, and have a great week.
That's Brett Ciancia. Thanks to Matt Humans as well for jumping in a little bit earlier. Just a reminder, Wes Reynolds tomorrow on the podcast. We'll run through the Week 13 card with Wes. Matt's best bets, we will re-air those as well tomorrow. But for Brett and Matt, I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan Hunter. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.